The makers of Super Shell gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is the world's outstanding entertainer, Al Jolson, with an all-star bill of famous guest stars. We switch you now to Shell Chateau, where you'll be greeted by Al Jolson.
Good evening, friends. Here's where your worry ends, where everyone attends. Good evening, friends. Your name somehow I can't recall right now, but know you all I bow. Good evening, friends. Here's Herr Plum, and I'm Madame. Monsieur Ferry, Bonsoir Cherry, I'm a tallyboo, a boo, a boo, a boo. I know you all, I do. Good evening, friends. Pull up the chair and turn the lights down low. You read out Shell Chateau. Good evening, friends. We're on the air just once a week, you know. Each week a brand new show for you, my friends. The music starts, the curtain parts. An hour of fun for everyone. Although it's true that I cannot see you, I almost feel I do. Good evening, friends. Thank you, folks, thank you. Here it is, Saturday night again, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to Shell Chateau once more. And I know you're going to enjoy yourself, for tonight, well, we have another great show. For music, we have Victor Young and his officer. You know, I was just telling Victor a few moments ago when I came to Shell Chateau this afternoon, a fellow walked up to me and said, Mr. Jolson, you know something? You look just like Victor Young. Victor turned around to me and said, where is that guy? I'd like to punch him in the nose. I said, too late, Victor. I'd kill him. For song, we have Miss Maxine Lewis. And what a grand little singer of song she is. Today, she came to Shell Chateau all dressed up. She'd been to her grandfather's birthday party. And she said, you know, Mr. Jolson, today my granddaddy is 86 years old, and he has 25 children. Don't you think I ought to notify the newspapers? I said, no, not yet. Why don't you wait till you get the final score? Wait a minute. Now I'm coming to it. For sports, we have George Weatherett, the greatest woman golfer in the world. And speaking of golf, a great many people would like to know if learning to play golf is like learning to drive a car. Well, all I can say is, when you learn to play golf, you don't hit anything. For drama, we have Boris Karloff, the Frankenstein of the movie, whose horrifying characterizations give you the chills. I'm going to let you know a little secret now. Before Victor Young became a band leader, he was a villain, too. He used to lead women on and then leave them in the dark. He was an usher at the Paramount. For comedy, we have the best, George Ethel, one of the few actors whose heart is still in the theater. Yes, and he's among the very few who still have high hopes that the theater will come back in its own again. Funny thing, the other day I went up to George's ranch, and what do you think he was doing? He was crossing homing pigeons with parrots. And I said, Georgie, what's the idea? Isn't it silly to cross homing pigeons with parrots? He said, listen, if a pigeon gets lost, at least he can ask his way home. Some time ago, ladies and gentlemen, I sang a song that had to do with the summertime. And since the weather here in Los Angeles is hot, and the nights are full of romance, I think it's no more than fitting that I sing the song again. The title is Coney Island. Shout out, Victor. Every summer, we go down to Deauville by the sea, where one can rub his shoulders with a king. St. Moritz in wintertime, that's the place to be. And then to Paris in the spring, where one can have his little fling. Though Normandy is lovely in November, somehow it leaves you nothing to remember. I can't forget the night I met you down at Coney Island. See, I was proud you picked me from the crowd at Coney Island. And very soon I proved to you that my intentions weren't phony. It ended in a matrimony. And now we're eating caviar instead of macaroni. But I recall those picnic lunches of bologna with a smile. I guess I'm still a hick, 'cause I still get a kick. Just loving you while coming through the crowded Coney Isle. I can't forget the night I met you down at Coney Island. Gee, I was proud you picked me from the crowded Coney Island. And very soon I proved to you that my intentions weren't phony. It ended in a macaroni. And now we're eating caviar instead of macaroni. But I recall the picnic lunches of bologna with a smile. I guess I'm still a hick, 'cause I still get a kick. Just loving you while shoving through the crowd at
Ladies and gentlemen, our first guest in Shell Chateau tonight is a golfer. Of course, we've had golfers in Shell Chateau before this, and good ones too. But tonight we're presenting undoubtedly the greatest golfer that ever lived. But wait a minute, when I say the greatest golfer that ever lived, that isn't my idea. I heard Bobby Jones say so. I've heard all the big golfers agree that the finest player of all time is a girl, and a very feminine one, too. How does that make you feel, you big, strong men? Her name is Joyce Weatherett. She's made three comebacks. She quit competitive golf in 1925 and came back to win the British Open in 1929. She came back again in 1932 to beat Joanna Collette in the international matches. And now, after a layoff of 2.5 years, she's come back again in the most brilliant series of exhibition matches a woman has ever played. And so I'm not only pleased but proud to welcome her to Shell Chateau tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Joyce Weatherett.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, Joyce, don't be nervous. Just imagine you're playing a match. But tell me one thing, Joyce. How have you been shooting over here?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, well, that's an American phrase, shooting. I mean, what sort of scores have you been making in your exhibition matches?
Oh, I've had an average of about 77.
77. And that's all been on regular championship courses, hasn't it? What's the best score, for instance, you made over here?
Well, I got 170 on a course in
Pittsfield,
Vermont.
Pittsfield, Vermont? You've got your face mixed. You mean Massachusetts.
Oh, that's right, Massachusetts. But the other the course I could cover. I think 70 is far,
though. Well, would you say you were playing as well as you played in 1929 when you beat Joanna Collette?
Yes, I think so. I've made some of my lowest scores since then. What I can't tell, of course, is whether or not I've still got the competitive temperament I used to have.
Oh, you mean your fighting spirit?
Yes. In 1929, I always knew I could chop a putt in.
I beg your pardon?
I could always get the ball in the hole.
Oh, I didn't know. Chop a putt. Well, anyway. But, folks, I must tell you one funny thing about Joyce. She played golf from the time she was 8 years old. She used to play with her brother, Roger Weatherett, who became the British amateur champion. But she never liked the game until she was 17. At least, that is what I've heard. Is that right, Joyce?
Yes. When I was about 17, I suddenly got quite the keen.
You got keen. In our language, folks, that means she got hot. Joyce, look, when you were 18, you played in your first tournament, did you?
Yes, the women's first championship.
That's what you call the only open to English women, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, tell us about that first tournament, Joyce.
Well, I was terribly lucky because I wasn't very good then. But in that 1 week, I started to play much better than I ever played in my life. I really beat quite a lot of good players. And in the last round, I met Sir Leach, the champion. It was a 36-hole match, and after the first 18, I was 4 down. After lunch, I lost 2 more.
6 down and 16 to go?
That's right. And then I won a couple of holes, and at the 27th, I was 4 down.
4 down starting the last night.
Yes. Then I got 4 threes in a row, and Miss Leach began to crack a little.
4 threes in a row? It's a wonder Miss Leach didn't bust wide open. Go on, Joyce, I'm interested. 4 threes has got me excited.
Well, anyway, those 4 threes made it all even on the 13th green. We halved the next 2, and I won the 16th. So I was 1 up with 2 to play. On the 17th, a long hole of a bunker in front of the green, and a railway track along the side of it, Bessel tried to get on in two with a Broadway, and she landed in a bunker. She took two to get out of the bunker, put six on the hull. I'd been playing it safe and was on in three. I had a putt of about 30 feet, and just as I struck the ball, an express train roared past right behind me.
An express train? Well, didn't that bother you?
No, I never even heard it. They tell me about it afterwards.
Well, what about the putt?
It stopped 6 inches from the cup, and Cecil gave me the miss.
Folks, that's what you call concentration.
Of course, I wasn't lucky enough to see that match, but I do remember your thrilling comeback in 1929 Open when you played Glenn and Colette in that final round. Tell about that match, Joyce.
Well, Glenn, I was simply magnificent. On the first night, you went out in 34, while I was taking 39. I was three fighting. And the Scotch girl, we were getting frightfully gloomy to see the American player five up. But on the 12th, Glenn missed a 3-foot putt, and that helped me no end. I got three holes back coming in. So I was only two down at the end of the first 18.
Well, what happened in the afternoon?
Well, at the end of the first nine, I was four up. And then we had the most frightful struggle all the way in. And Glenna got two trees running, and at the 15th tee, I was only two up. Glenna was on the green in two, and I was on in three. I saw my lead vanishing, but I sank an 18-foot putt for half, the luckiest putt I've ever made. Then we halved the 16th, and I started the 17th tour.
Two up and two to play. What a match. Go on, Joyce.
You know the 17th green at St. Andrews?
The 17th green at St. Andrews? I think my father was a caddy there. I'm not sure. No, I don't know it, but I heard it's a Lulu.
Yes, it's a Lulu.
It's a Lulu.
It's the most terrifying green ever made, I think. It's a long, narrow green and a very long hole. And Glenn played the 17th badly. He didn't get on in three, and I did, just barely on the corner of it. But it was all over.
So you won on the 35th green. I wish I'd seen that match, but Joyce, I understand you'll have a tough match tomorrow at the Wiltshire Country Club.
Well, it should be quite interesting, I hope. Willie Hunter and Charlie Guest are going to play against Olin Dutra and myself.
You and Dutra? Why, Joyce, it's in the bag.
In the bag?
Well, by that I mean you can't lose. We had Olin Dutra here in Shell Chateau, so you and Olin are really the Shell Chateau team.
Well, Mr. Gilson, I shall certainly do my best for the honor of dear old Shell Chateau.
That's the spirit, Joyce. Stop those putts for good old Shell Chateau. Ladies and gentlemen, out here in California, we have very unusual weather. In the summertime, it never rains. The other night, it poured. It was during that rainstorm that Jack Benton was calling on Peggy Gardner, and he was just about to go home. So Mrs. Gardner said, Jack, you can't go home in this rain. You better sleep here tonight in the spare bedroom. Jack said, fine. But when Peggy and Mrs. Gardner came downstairs from making the bed a few moments later, Jack was gone. Well, sir, a quarter of an hour later, he came rushing back to the house soaking wet. Mrs. Gardner said, why, Jack, where have you been? He said, I went home for my pajamas. And now the kids are going to sing, We Will Always Be Sweethearts, Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner.
I'm thankful to fate that I found a mate whose love is as great as my love.
I'm certain that you want no
the day we began.
Do what you may, we will always be sweethearts, for you are my boy and my man.
She kisses me, but my lips are so willing. Yeah.
this evening, ladies and gentlemen. On Edgehead this evening, ladies and gentlemen, the famous comedian who was with us 4 weeks ago. You know, it's the first act we've ever repeated in Chicago. But I got hundreds of phone calls asking me, please, please, wouldn't I put this fellow on again? In fact, I finally got so tired having Jessel call me, I just brought him back. That's all. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, George Jessel.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, AC. It's really a great pleasure to be back on this show, the program, to be brought back not only because I have another job, but also the shows that the request of an entire nation have been granted. However, the amusement business is a very, very interesting business. It mirrors life itself. You never know just what's going to happen in this game. It's a sesame often or a stage. Anything may happen. It's all a gamble. For instance, a woman screams and becomes an opera singer. My wife screams and a bandit runs away. You know what I mean? But you really, everything is a gamble. I say that because every place that I've been in the last 4 or 5 months, the spirit of gambling is prevalent all over. Wherever you go, people say, I'm betting, I'm betting. I'm told there's a clearinghouse where you call up and make bets on anything. And people are betting on what they call parlays. A parlay is when you make one bet to have it apply on another. In other words, if you're so fortunate with the one bet, you might win two wages at the same time. And at this betting place, fellow told me, they call up. He says, I want to bet 2-1. The Giants have beat St. Louis. If they do, bet it, and there'll be war in Europe. That was one parlay. Another parlay, fellas, I want to bet 8-5 that Max Baer will beat Lewis. If they do, bet my wife will have canned salmon when I get home tonight, you know? Speaking of salmon, which leads into cooking, there's one thing you can always gamble on, that if you eat at my mother's house. I have to bring this in, really. If you eat a dinner at my house, you don't have to eat again for 8 or 9 months. First place you can, because you don't feel well. That doesn't start up. You come to my house for dinner, as you get to the door, if you don't smell it, my mother don't have it. That out there. I think by way of that, I'll call her up, if it's all right. I want to use. Hello. Operator, I want to get Joel Sonia, 8645, please. Thank you. Might as well plug the voice. Hello? Hello, Mrs. Kahn. Well, how do you do, Mrs. Kahn? This is George Jessel. Hey, Mrs. Kahn, I wonder if you'd do me a favor. It's such a lovely day out. Would you mind going up 4 flights and asking my mother to come down to your phone, please? No, we can't use our phone. They got something wrong. Something with a bill. Who knows it? Sent up 2 men and screwed the whole telephone. Yes, yeah, pipe work. That's what it is, yeah. Oh, you say my mother is right there in your apartment? Well, no, isn't that a coincidence? I say that's good. I say that she's there. Would you be so... Thanks. Hello, Mom? George. Your son from the money every week. How are you, dear? Well, I'm fine. I'm back on the Shell Chateau program with Al Jolson. No, no, it's no benefit. I'll get something. Don't worry about it. Tell me, how do you feel, Mom? Oh, you still get the dizzy spells, huh? Well, that's fine. Every 5 minutes, a dizzy spell. How long does it last? A half hour. What do you think of that? So what about those powders that Dr. Flick gave you? Don't they help? Oh, you took the powders and it was nothing. Well, are you sure you took the right directions, Mother? You must just take enough powder to cover a dime. You didn't have a dime. You took it on 2 nickels. Well, you see, that's no good. You say what? You see spots in front of your eyes, huh? Well, what about your glasses? If you see spots in front of your eyes, wear your glasses. They're on your forehead. Well, how long will it take to get down? 2-3 months, huh? If you see spots in front of you, put on your glasses. You got them on? How is it? See this much better, I think. Ah. Say, Mom, how did you like that bird that I sent home for the parlor? You cooked it? That was a very smart thing. A South American bird is full 4 languages. You should have said something. Well, I'll get something else, Mother. I'm going to browse around the art shops here in Hollywood, and I'm sure that I can find a nice Whistler's mother. If I get it, we'll get a gold frame and hang it over the fireplace. It'll look lovely. For the parlor, I'm going to bring home Whistler's mother. You'll have to sleep with Willie. I figured you'd say that. By the way, how is Willie? How does he feel? He's got changes. He don't feel good, eh? What about those little pills that I used to take?
What do you mean you don't want to take those little bitsy pills?
Oh, you put some pills in a banana? He just ate the banana.
Well, put him on the phone. I want to talk to him.
Hello, Sonny. Well, how do you feel? Mother says you just had a banana. Did you eat it all? All except the seed? Listen, your illness is a punishment for your bad manners. The other night at the dinner table, reaching and grabbing for everything. You must have reached and grabbed at the dinner table. Haven't you got a tongue? You don't reach that far. No, yeah, you'd be a good boy. How are you getting on at school? You got 100 in composition. What was the composition? Teacher gave you an hour to write a composition on baseball. You did it in a minute. Well, of course. What kind of composition can you write on baseball in a minute? You wrote rain, no gain. Well, that's all right. Now, you be a good boy. You what? You want to go into business? Ah, is that cute? A kid 10 years old, he wants to go. What kind of business you want to go in, Sonny? Stealing tires? Get off the phone. Is your sister Anna there? Put her on. That's my sister Anna, folks. She's a lovely girl. She's been engaged since 1911. So, hello. Hello, Anna. Look, Anna, you know, I'm your oldest brother, and I don't want you to think that I'm picking on you because I love you. But look, Anna, what's going to be with that fella, for heaven's sake? Well, the man doesn't want to work. He sleeps 18 hours a day. Why don't you tell him Lincoln, Jefferson, Washington, they slept 5 hours. Did you tell him that? What does he say? Look where they are now. No, I can't get him a job. Any fellow who gets fired from the 5- and 10-cent store because he can't remember the prices, such a fellow you can't help. Well, you love him. You make your own bed. You'll butter it, that's all. Well, it's all right with me, honey. You bet. You what? You think you'll be married this winter? You said it'll be a cold day before. All right. Put your mother on. Hello, Mom. Well, there's nothing you can do with her. She loves him, and there you are. Well, let her get as much out of life as she can. You know what Longfellow tells us? Tell me not in mournful numbers. Life is but an empty dream. Longfellow told us that. I shouldn't go around with him. He's drunk. Henry was with Longfellow, the poet. He didn't live next door to us at all. That was Lowenstein, a barber who lived next door. Well, look, Mother, how are you getting along with your diet? Well, what did you have for your luncheon? 2 plates of bean soup, small piece of fish, little steak, and some potato, a salad, some asparagus, 3 pieces of peach pie and coffee. What about your diet? Oh, then you took the milk and crackers. I see. All right, well, Yes, Mother. I'm going to sing it now. Yeah. He sends a love to you, Al, and to you too, ladies and gentlemen. A song called Life is a Song. Victor, tell the union.
Life is a song. Let's sing it together. Let's take our hearts and dip them in rhyme.
I love this song. You know, some songs have so much more personality than others. Personality is a very peculiar thing. We often wonder just what it is. Eleanor Glynn, I think, came closest when she said, it's that certain something that one person has when he or she enters a room immediately. All eyes are turned toward that person. And there's the other kind, like my sister's fella, where you look away mad right away, you know? To show you what personality will do, about 3 or 4 years ago, I spoke out here at a dinner, given at one of the hotels by Mr. Sid Browman, to a great many celebrities. And all these people were tense, waiting for these personalities to come in, you know, nervously playing with their knives and forks. I'll never forget it. Eddie Cantor came in, and the people cheered. Al Jolson came in, they cheered. I came in, they started to eat. And finally, to show you what personality will do, Marie Chevalier entered. And when Chevalier entered, all the women fainted. I've never seen anything like that in my life. What is it? Well, they came in with such a pussy. Chevalier came in and everybody fainted. Then Clark Gable came in and Chevalier fainted. Let's strike on old Pendleton Road concerning spring weather. Let's sing it together and make life a song. want you folks here in Chicago to know that Jessel isn't the only guy that can call up his mother and use the phone. I got a pull around here, too. And if he can phone his mama, I can phone mine. Hello, Mama. This is your son, Abe. I mean, Al. What do you mean, Mama? Sure I'm working. I'm still the host at Chicago. And believe me, Mama, it's a swell job. But no matter how swell the job can be or how swell the people are that I'll ever meet, to you, Mama, darling, I'll always be just plain old me. Some folks never are contented with the little things they've got. But I never have repented. I'm happy with my lot. I like it here where I am, seeing the things that I see, doing the things that I do, just being plain old me. Here in my own little nest, life is a sweet melody, and I find contentment and rest just being plain old me. You won't ever see me crying, 'cause I can't reach the sun. Say I ain't even trying to change my place with anyone. I like it here where I am, just letting everything be, loving the things that I love, just being plain old me. I like it, yeah, where I am, seeing the things that I see, doing the things that I do, just being plain old me. Here in my own little nest, life is a sweet melody, and I find contentment and rest just being plain old me. You won't ever see me crying, 'cause I can't reach the sun. Say, I even crying to change my place with anyone. I like it, here where I am, just letting everything be, loving the things that I love, just being plain old me.
This is Shell Al Jolson, folks. We're back in Shell to go. And now you're going to hear a medley from Victor Young from the new picture, Every Night at 8. Played as only Victor can play it. Shell out, Victor, you gift horse. Come on. Thank you.
folks, I want you to meet a very sweet and charming little girl. I heard her sing at a party out here one night, and so did a lot of other people, movie executives. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw her on the screen one of these days. And I'm very happy to have her here in Shell Chateau tonight. Her name, Maxine Lewis. She's going to sing a medley called A Melody, pardon me. And a medley in a melody, that's right. That's the way I feel. All set, Maxine?
All set.
Okay, Victor, if you please. Introduce to you a man who's one of the finest and most versatile actors in Hollywood. Surely you saw him in Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein, and you'll soon be seeing his new picture by Arthur Strong, The Black Room. But tonight we are presenting him in a different kind of a role, the part of the Rajah in the famous stage success, The Green Goddess. You'll be supported by Miss Margaret Brayton and Mr. Crawford Kent. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome to Shell Chateau Mr. Boris Karloff. The Green Goddess is a dramatic adventure of three English people who fall in the hands of an Indian Rajah, played by Mr. Boris Karloff. While flying over the Rajah's territory, Lucilla Crespin, her husband Major Crespin, and Dr. Basil Traherne, her brother, are forced down. Hundreds of miles from the nearest British post, their plane completely smashed. The Rajah, a cold, cruel Oriental, who's been educated in England but hates the English, is delighted to welcome the three strangers. The reason the Rajah is so friendly is that his three half-brothers are to be executed for murder by the British. And so he proposes in revenge to sacrifice the lives of his three guests to the Green Goddess, the supreme deity of his kingdom. However, he's been attracted by Lucilla, so strongly, in fact,
that he may be even willing to give up his revenge in order to possess her. Our scene is the Raj's beautiful library, where we find His Royal Highness alone with Lucilla Cressman.
Please spare me a few moments, Mrs. Cressman. I want to speak to you seriously.
Well, I'm listening.
You're very curt, Mrs. Cressman. I'm afraid you bear me malice. You hold me responsible for the doubtless trying situation in which you find yourself.
It's not myself I care about, but Major Cressman and my brother. If you cut short his medical research, you killed millions of your own race whom he would have saved.
I don't know that I care very much about the millions of whom you speak. And as for Major Cressman, he is your husband. Is that to recommend him to me? One is, after all, a man. And the favor shown to another man by a beautiful woman...
I won't listen to another word of this.
Please, please, Mrs. Cressman.
Oh.
You spoke last night of your children. I think you said a boy and a little girl.
A boy, 6 years old. A girl, four.
Oh, I feel for you, Mrs. Cressman. I do indeed. I would do anything.
Prince, if I write them a letter of farewell, will you give me your word of honor that it shall reach them?
Ah, there, madam, I'm afraid you must pardon me. I have already said that the last thing I desire is to attract the attention of the government of India. No, madam, I cannot risk it.
Cannot? You dare not? Let me go to my husband, please.
Not yet, Mrs. Cressman. One word more. I couldn't undertake to send a letter to your children. But it would be very easy for me to have them carried off and brought to you here.
What do you mean?
I mean that in less than a month, you may have your children in your arms, uninjured, unsuspecting, happy. If...
If?
Oh, in your own time, of your own free will. If you will accept the homage, it will be my privilege to offer.
That...
Have the courage to die, dear lady? Why not have the courage to live? You believe, I dare say, that tomorrow, when the ordeal is over, you will awaken in a new life and that there your children will rejoin you. But suppose it were. Suppose if in 40, 50, 60 years they passed over to you. Would they still be children? Can God himself give you back their child? But what I offer you is a new life. Not problematical, but assured. A new life without passing through the shadow of death. A future utterly cut off from the past. Except that your children will be with you. Not as vague shades, but living and loving. In the meantime, you yourself are only on the threshold of the best years of your life. And you'll pass them. Not as an officer's wife in a paltry Indian cantonment, but as the absolute queen of an absolute king. Your son, if you gave me one, should be the prince of princes. My other sons should all bow down and serve him. I beg you to answer.
I can't answer the greater part of what you've been saying, for I have not heard it. At least I have not understood it. All I've heard is, in less than a month, you may have your children in your arms. And then again... Can God himself give you back their childhood? These words have kept hammering in my brain. You see, I bit my lips to keep from shrieking aloud. I think the devil must have put them in your mouth.
Oh, you don't believe in that nonsense?
Perhaps not. But there is such a thing as diabolical temptation. And you have stumbled upon the secret of it.
Stumbled?
Mastered the art of it, if you like. But all I can think of is, can God himself give you back their childhood? In a month, you may have them in your arms.
Yes, yes, think of that. In 3 or 4 weeks, you may have your little one.
Yes, but on what condition? That I should desert my husband and my brother. Should let them go alone to their death. Should cowl in some back room of this murderous house of yours, listening to the ticking of the clock and thinking, now the stroke has fallen. Stuffing my ears old enough to hear the yells of your bloodthirsty savages, and yet perhaps hearing nothing else in my dying day. No, Prince. You said something about not passing through the shadow of death. If I did this, I should not pass through it, but live in it and bring my children into it as well. That would be the good of having them in my arms. I could not look them in the face.
That is your answer?
It's only possible, Ernest.
But not the last word, milady.
The hour for the sacrifice has arrived. For one life has been sacrificed already. Major Crespin, discovering a wireless transmitter in the Rogers Palace, has been shot down in cold blood, while desperately at
3 days. As he dies, the Major swears his message did not get through. Our scene now is a huge open-air temple of the Green Goddess, filled with a Rogers subject. Lucilla Crespin and her brother stand, guarded by the Rogers priest, near the sacrificial altar, on which in a few moments their life's blood will be splashed. And now, the Roger himself arrives.
Oh, Dr. Traherne, could I trouble you to move a little aside from the sacrificial altar? I am for the moment not a king, but a priest entering his temple. I must observe a certain ritual. Ridiculous, isn't it?
Thanks.
And as for you, madam, will you force me to do violence to my feelings by including you in the approaching ceremony? There is still time. I repeat my offer to your children.
I would die 100 times rather than see them in your hands.
But can you be sure, dear lady, that you will save your children just by dying? At my leisure, I can have them kidnapped or I can have them killed.
You devil! How did you so handle that?
Just time up, please. Chivalrous but ill-advised, Dr. Severn. I regret it, and so will you. My priest here will insist now that as you have laid impious hands on the chief of their sacred path, your death alone will not appease the fury of the goddess. They will insist on subjecting you to a process of expiation. A ritual of great antiquity, but...
You mean possible?
Well, yes. Not you, madam, not you.
I must speak to you, Your Highness. I must speak to you alone. Send my brother away.
Priscilla, what are you thinking of?
I beg you, I beg you 1 minute no more.
Take Dr. Traherne into the other chamber, please. And now, madam?
I didn't go. Send him back to India unharmed and... It shall be as you wish.
So... But suppose I agree, would we accept this sacrifice?
No, he wouldn't, but he must have no choice. That's part of the bargain. Send him, bound hand and foot if need be, down to Kashmir and put him over the frontier.
You don't care what he thinks of
you. He will know what to think.
And I too, madam, know what to think. Come, look me in the eyes and tell me that you honestly intend to fulfill your bargain. I knew it. You're playing with me. But the confiding barbarian is not so simple as you imagine. You think when you have to pay up, you will put me off with your dead body. Well, let me tell you, I have no use for you dead. I want you with all the blood in your veins, with all the pride in that fine brain of yours. I want to make my plaything of your beauty and my mockery of your pride. Come now, I'll make you a plain offer. I'll put Dr. Traherne over the frontier, and if they set him free, my people shall hand him a letter written by you, asking to have your children conveyed to you here.
Never, never, never. I will make no bargain involve my children.
You see, you will give me no hostages for the fulfillment of your bond. But a pledge of your good faith I must have. For without a pledge, madam, I don't believe in it one little bit.
What pledge?
Only one is left. Dr. Traherne himself. I may, though it will strain my power to the uttermost, save your brother's life while holding him in prison. Then, when you have fulfilled your bond, fulfilled it to the uttermost, mark you, when you have borne me a child, I will let him go free. But the moment you attempt to evade your pledge, by death or by escape, I'll hand him over to the priests to work their will with, and I'll put no restraint upon their savage instincts. Now choose, my dear lady. Choose. My people are getting impatient. Choose. What the devil?
Lucilla, let me go. Let me go. Lucilla.
Lower.
Yes, Lucilla, we are saved.
Oh, your husband did get the wireless message through. Ah, here's one of the fires already. He should be brought here unharmed.
Mrs. Crispin, Dr. Treherne, where's Major Crispin?
He was shot while trying to fitting our message. I'm so sorry, Mrs. Crispin.
I'm sorry to interrupt these effusions, but who are you, sir?
Like Lieutenant Cardew, I have the honor to represent His Majesty, the King Emperor. And let me inform you, sir, that if I do not signal your submission within 3 minutes of our landing...
Precisely. I fancied your government effected some scrupulous slaughter of innocent civilians.
There has been no slaughter as yet. The bomb fell in the ravine where it could do no harm. So will the next one. But the third. Well, if you're wise, you'll throw up the sponge and there won't be a third.
Throw up the sponge, Lieutenant? Why on earth can I throw up the sponge? A bomb may drop from the temple, you say? Well, in that case, you and your friends will escort me in fragments to my last abode.
Does that prospect allure you?
I call your bluff, Lieutenant Cardew. My poor child is suffering. Apparently, they have a superstitious dread of bombs. You will kindly signal to your sergeant command of my acceptance of your terms.
I thought you'd come to reason.
This comes of falling behind the times. If I had anti-aircraft guns...
Thank heaven you haven't.
All clear. For the moment, Roger. And now if you'll assign us an escort through the crowd, please.
Certainly. Silence. Silence! The escort will be here in a moment. It only remains for me to see the parting guest. I hope you may one day renew our acquaintance.
Oh, not here.
I plainly foresee that I shall have to join the other team at the next time. Perhaps you may meet at Hamburg, or perhaps at Monte Carlo, just to talk over old times. Ah, here is the escort. Goodbye, dear lady. I lament the Major's end. Perhaps I was hasty, but you know, it is better to have loved than lost, etc., etc. And, oh, Mrs. Preston, my love to the children. Oh, well. It probably has been a confounded nuisance.
Thank you, Mr. Carlo. Thank you. Last week, I sang a song called Isn't It a Lovely Day from the new Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers picture Top Hat. But Irving Berlin isn't the kind of a man that writes a picture with one song hit. He wrote a lot of swell songs for that picture. And tonight, I'd like to sing you another one. It is called Cheek to Cheek.
I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Oh, I'd love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you, the charm about you will carry me through to heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I'd love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek.
Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it. I have as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me. I want my arm about you. The charm about you will carry me through to heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing. Gentlemen, we're all here in Chalcito next Saturday night, because next week we're going to have a great show. You know the country's latest craze, indoor baseball? Thousands of men and women have become fans in the last few months. Next week we're going to have with us Miss Lois Terry, sensational young platinum blonde pitcher on one of Hollywood's leading softball teams. We're going to have two of the most popular young screen stars in the entire motion picture colony, Miss Heather Angel, Ralph Forbes. We're going to have Miss Betty Borden, a Cunningham singer. And last but not least, listen, kiddies, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have that dizzy, dashy comedian, Joe Penner. So remember, it's a date next Saturday night. And don't forget, the next time you're out driving, you need gas, drop in your nearest Shell service station. This is Al Jolson saying from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Father. Thank you, Father.
Tune in next week at this time when Al Jolson presents Lois Terry, Heather Angel and Ralph Forbes, Betty Borden and Joe Penner. Musical selections tonight included We Will Always Be Sweethearts from One Hour With You, Hallelujah and Sometimes I'm Happy from Hit the Deck, and I Want to Be Happy from No No Nanette. Burton Bennett, your announcer. This program has come to you from the NBC studios in Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.